session number 11486, rule 3.
Well, what were the sort of messages coming over the air to the German population during the phony war? Can you remember? Was Hitler still talking, making his speeches?
Yes, he made a speech at the beginning of the campaign and probably again at the end. He always made one on the 9th of November, which was a day where in 1923 there had been a march through München of the Nazis, and they had been shot at, and they had survived this. I think Hitler was afterward put into prison, and that was something they always celebrated or remembered, I should say, and he tended to make a speech, so no doubt he made a speech that November. I can't recall it. I suppose general jubilation from high on that the campaign, after all, had gone swiftly and well, and I can't quite remember. I can't remember particular incidents that were mentioned against either Britain or France. I don't think there was any bombing. There wasn't during that period. So I feel it was more ordinary life than not.
Was there no sort of war preparation? Did you not dig shelters, build shelters at that stage?
I'm just thinking about that. I think that came a bit later. Yes, there was a lot of building of concrete bunker, as we call them, big ones. Every town in our area had them. They would hold about 2,000 people, and they were pretty impregnable. I mean, you could almost have a bomb on top of it, and it would hold that. They were probably started the following spring, I think. Yes, I think there were three in our town, and my father's works, there were two built for everybody working there. And they were, of course, later on constantly used. In fact, we had eventually, but that's going ahead, our own private one. The area where we lived, there were a lot of the managers for the works. We lived together, and they built as a private bunker, which we could all just walk to for about 40 people. Later on, there were about 70 people in there, which was a fantastic construction. It was built in 43, 3 meters concrete all round, and necessary. Really, quite an amazing thing. I still have my ticket entitling me to go into there with our own pumping. It had telephone and light and an own handwork thing for power as well, for lighting, as it were. Yes, that was beginning, I suppose, but I think it only the official ones only started after the campaign in France, and that of course is when the bombing started in May the 10th, when the troops marched into Holland, Belgium, Luxembourg, and France. And that very first night, we had our first real air raid with bombs dropping. And it went on from there with a few interludes. And that's when the bunker were built for the population. But you mustn't forget that German houses all have cellars, most of them. And so one simply went into the cellar, and the cellars were substantial, and it was a sort of constant thing to work out whether the cellar roof would hold the house if it collapsed. And that's a funny sort of thing one discussed. It was an important thing. And I remember finding out that, knowing that, that our cellar that would actually hold the house if it completely collapsed on top, which it might have done. It didn't completely collapse, but it might have done. So one spent a lot of time in the cellar from 1940 onwards, or May 1940 onwards.
These big, you know, while we're on the subject, I know this is sort of going into the war, but the bunkers, these hugely reinforced bunkers, would they have had things like toilets built in as well?
Yes, they did. They did. They weren't sufficient for the end when there were literally thousands of people in for a week at the end of the war. Then sanitary conditions were pretty grim. But yes, I think they did. And they had all the double door system in on the basis so that if one door was opened, there would then be a space for the draft to come in, and then there'd be another door. And there was sort of a three huge door system, iron door. We had a heavy iron door and window put to the cellar, our air raid cellar, part of our cellar which we got ready for the air raid was actually the wine cellar, and the window was partly visible from above, so we had a heavy iron door there and a heavy iron door to the entrance to the cellar. And of course, now I come to think of it, one thought at that stage that wouldn't have gas attacks. All those doors were sealed against gas. And my mother had to go on a course for how to deal with gas. And every first aid course had that in it. We were all trained. I don't know how one would have coped, probably hopeless. But we most certainly were instructed. And the instructors used to come, oh, yes, the common mit gas. This was always a standard phrase. They'll come with gas, and of course, neither side did.
Did you have gas masks this year?
Yes, we were all issued with gas masks, which in fact were extremely useful to put out fires against the smoke, and that's where we used them. When they were later on incendiary bombs and you wanted to put them out, when we used to put the gas mask on so that one didn't have smoke. My father had a superior one at the works. He was in charge of air raid protection for the works. So he had a superior one with a sort of, like the army had, with a tube coming down from his mouth. We just had an ordinary one where something was screwed on top of our, in front of our mouth to breathe through, which I suppose was a filter of some description. Yes, we all had them.
Yes, when would they have been issued?
Oh, I think they were issued almost immediately war started, now I come to think of it, actually. We had them in the cellar, one used to put them on and laugh about them the way one does because they look all so ugly. But yes, I think they were. But one didn't have to carry them around all the time. In fact, one didn't. They resided in our air raid shelter and in our air raid cellar, and we left them there.
And did you have anything like the Home Guard in Britain, you know, a sort of civilian force to defend the area or do certain duties? You know,
not defend, but certain duties. Yes, each house had a sort of person in charge, like a warden, and somebody who had to have first aid training, and somebody who had to run messages. And so usually the younger people were the messengers and the mothers did the first aid and the warden bit because the fathers weren't necessarily there. And that was per unit of house. I think we probably shared it together with our neighbours or something. Yes, and they had some training. But it wasn't really used in any way because if there was an emergency, everybody did what they could at the time and as it was proper.
Did you have a siren, you know, a warning?
Mm. Mm. Oh, yes. I think it's quite international. The up and down for the alarm and the all clear was just a steady sound. Oh, yes, most certainly. And I suppose they were probably put up right at the start. They weren't used then, of course.
So would you say that the shelter provision, you know, your bunker provision, was that adequate for what happened later?
Yes, I think so. Well, the cellars wouldn't always have been adequate, but the provision for civilians was pretty good. We had very comparatively few losses of the civilian population. Obviously, there were some, but comparatively few. If one thinks of the amount of bombing and the destruction wrought, surprisingly few in our part of the world. Obviously, towns that weren't prepared for heavy attacks and were more densely populated with inner cities like Hamburg, they had enormous losses, or, well, not to talk of Dresden, where it went astronomical. They weren't at all prepared. But a lot of preparation was made in our part because we were expected to be bombed, and also it was an area that was immensely important for the war effort. So we were, I feel, always treated a little special. We had extra rations after heavy air raids of coffee and schnapps, and I think allowances were made in that way because people had to get up and go to work and produce, and that was all important.
Do you remember who built the bunkers? You know, it must have been a great job, you know, with these massive protective walls. Did they use forced labour?
Yes, I remember in 43, our own bunker, there were definitely Russians working there. And there couldn't have been for the others. Or they were started with German labour, but I should think they were largely built by forced labour, yes, which became available in larger numbers, of course, after the Russian campaign started. And there were also a lot of jobs that comparatively unskilled labour could do, I mean, cement mixing and that sort of thing under supervision. Yes, I think there were.
Well, thank you very much, Inga. I think that was a very interesting exploration of the shelter situation. Mm-hmm. So now if I could go back to 1940 and the sort of invasion of Scandinavia and the Low Countries and France, mm-hmm. the fall of France. Was that expected, would you say? You know, you had this phony war period, as indeed the British had. You know, did you think that this was going to happen? Or, you know, I wonder what your expectations leading up to sort of May 40 were.
I suppose one was gradually conditioned to it, as there wasn't any peace forthcoming, as there might have been, everybody agreeing now then we'll do something about Poland, but we'll have peace. That wasn't forthcoming. I think one gradually knew that it probably would go on. The Norwegian campaign, I remember very little about, I must say. It just sort of seemed to happen. The reason given was, of course, that England intended to occupy Norway, and therefore we had to do it first in order to secure that coastline. I didn't know anybody who went up there to fight or very much about it at all. It didn't sort of create much of a stir. Now, the France, of course, we did have heavy troop movement through the town. We had, after the first lot of soldiers, we had another lot billeted on us, and they then were suddenly moved away. So one suspected it, really. And it wasn't an enormous surprise. The surprise was simply the speed with which it was accomplished. The elder people no doubt thought of the First World War, where it all got stuck, and this time it didn't. People mentioned the Maginot Line, which of course was not even used, sort of just circumvented. And I suppose on the whole there was some elation. It was all so swift. It was a wonderful time of year. Much was made of it. Songs were produced and a lot was made of the march into Paris. I remember I was playing tennis and it was all great elation. I was at school and I had a master who was really quite Nazi-ish inclined, and he made me go and doing some of the lessons and look at it on a map, the advance of the army, you know, plant the flags and this sort of thing. So I was always quite well informed because I had to listen to the news and then put the plans and see how the flags and then see how everything had progressed. It was swift, but at the same time, of course, the air raid started. So one was rather aware of it all happening. And the first bombs dropped and the house was destroyed. It was all nothing really compared with later on, but it was the beginning, and one had sleepless nights and one was scared. But the country sort of was, in a sense, unfed, really, truly. My mother wasn't. She was always, well, she thought it was all too dreadful for words. We did hear quite a lot of foreign broadcasts at the time. By that time, of course, it was a much riskier business listening, but she did. But I suppose they simply confirmed what we knew. I seem to remember much is made in this country about Dunkirk, and I don't know, we didn't hear that much about it. We heard about it, but I think I don't even know whether it was considered a defeat or a victory, really. Come to think of it, I never knew much about it. Obviously, quite a lot of English soldiers were taken prisoner. They must have done, and quite a lot escaped. But I presume it was played down, quite frankly. There were people whose fathers were in France. I'm quite sure a lot of stuff was bought, in inverted commas, looted. I'm sure there was. People did get silks and more exotic foods and this sort of thing. We didn't have anybody in the army, so we didn't have any of it. I don't think it made any difference to our food situation, having France. That happened in Russia. There was a time when bread was very, very short before the Ukraine was captured, and then bread was plentiful again. I remember that quite distinctly because we all didn't have enough bread to eat, particularly my father. And we used to say, oh, he's home first, he will have stolen his slice of bread or something, you know, it's a family thing. And then when we had the Ukraine, and presumably the first harvest in the Ukraine in 41 in the autumn, it changed. There was enough bread again.
Going back to sort of 1940, were you aware of the sort of changeover of leadership in Britain? You know that Winston Churchill had replaced Chamberlain. I wonder if you heard any anti-Churchill rhetoric or...
I must have heard about it. Mm. I can't say it seemed important to us because it was just another country it was England with another leader, as it were. I should imagine that Hitler in his speeches then later on thundered against Churchill, and I presume he could pronounce the name, I think he could, and Eden. But it didn't make a big impression, really, the change of leadership there. The French had changed their leaders and so on. It just was another name, more or less.
And did you expect the invasion of England? You know, were you expecting that?
Yes, that was much talked about. It was Operation Sea Lion, wasn't it? Seelöwe. Boats were made at one place. A sister works of my father's made landing craft, which were then not used. One thought it might well be attempted, but as it didn't happen and then was played down, one forgot about it again. But one knew somehow there had been a failure somewhere, that it had been planned and the plan had been aborted. But that's really as much as I can remember of that particular aspect of the war. Then, of course, the fortifications were built, the Westwall, along the coast there, but that was later, I think.
Was there any evacuation from your area of children at that time?
No, that came later. That came as the bombing increased. And then families were sent away. Not that I knew of anybody who actually was evacuated. But people made their own arrangements. There was no official evacuation until later. When I was evacuated, then the whole school was. We were evacuated not as families, but as a school.
Yes, I'll ask you about that later, Inna. Mm-hmm. Of course, another thing would be the Italians coming into the war, wouldn't it, at this time? Yes, I wonder what, you know, you and your family, sort of how, was that regarded as a boost, or how?
Well, the Italians, I mean, it's dreadful to say, but on the whole, they're not regarded as particularly good allies because they turned tail in the First World War. They came in, as far as I know, just about on the last day of the campaign in France or last few days. And they weren't considered to be good soldiers or particularly stout campaigners. No, I think people shrugged their shoulders and they thought, well, they'd come in to sort of reap some benefit. I think that was the general attitude, not the official one, but the general attitude. And I think you could almost say that aloud. You would have said, they would have said, tut, tut, our allies, and there's Mussolini. But I think so many people thought this, that it wasn't a dangerous topic. You broadcast it in the street, but it was a sort of accepted theory.
Were you also seeing signs of prisoners of war, you know, after the fall of France?
Very few. There were some prisoners of war in the works. They came later, the French. I think they were taken to the east more, and the eastern prisoners were taken to the west. It seemed to work out like that, although we had quite a few French prisoners of war who came. I never saw even an English or American prisoner of war during the whole time. The French then came, yes. They had comparative license. They were soon allowed to just be about, actually, after a while. They were, well, comparatively, I think, well treated. In fact, they came back after the war as a sort of friendship thing. We had them at home quite often to help them. Our house was bomb damaged, and they were sent. They were employed at the works where my father was, and they were sent to help us clear away glass and the roof and dust and broken walls and that sort of thing. And we always used to practice our French on them. Had actually quite a good time. We were not supposed to, but we used to share a bottle of wine with them. And they were rather always amused. We had a picture of Napoleon. My grandfather was a great admirer of him, and so we had one. And they found this hanging behind the door, and they were absolutely elated that there was a picture of Napoleon in a German household.
Did they wear distinctive uniforms, the prisoners, French?
The prisoners of war, they had the uniform they'd been captured with, some sort of khaki brownie uniform type of thing, nothing else, no. There was nothing special about them in that respect, except that they wore their uniform, minus, I think, any insignias. But then we would have only had the ordinary soldiers. I think the officers would have been separated out. I never saw any of them.
The invasion of Russia, was that anticipated? You know, did you all expect that would happen when it did?
No, I thought it was crazy. Everybody was scared, and of course, obviously, Napoleon's experiences were much cited and expected. And then to begin with, it seemed to be going all very smoothly. The weather again was in Hitler's favour. And until the first winter, of course, and they got bogged down and were not prepared in any way properly. That sort of came through. One had to send furs, and one was asked to send furs and warm clothing, but they never reached them, I don't know.
And were you beginning to get, you know, German casualties? Were, you know, was this becoming...
Yes, that was starting. I remember the first boyfriends. One was in a clique of a set of people, and the first boyfriends being killed, people who were about 2 or 3 years older, in 1942, I think. I remember that quite distinctly. I was coming back from a service, and we had to do 3 months work on a farm during school time in 42, and I was coming back from that, and I heard of one of them being killed, and I remember that because he was the first. He was in a submarine. But the other boys weren't... I suppose that all came later, a year or two, sort of 43, 44, and then there were lots and lots of them. I have a picture where there, half of them were killed at least. The years, 3, 4 years older than myself, who were the years that had, I think, probably the most losses altogether. We didn't have an immediate member in the family being killed. One heard, of course, of sons of other people, and that was just about beginning then, particularly, of course, when the Russian campaign started. That's, I presume, where most of them got killed. One had the exploits, of course, on the other side, one had the exploits of the fighter pilots. They were the sort of glamour boys. I think they were here, and the submariners, the young man who went into Skagerrak, I mean, Günter Prien, that's right, he was fat at no end. I mean, they, I suppose, did fantastic deeds. They, at the same time, were extremely good-looking young men, or in their uniform, at least they were. And so they were the natural heroes, of course.
Is you've probably been seeing quite a lot about the Battle of Britain, and you will be, you know, up until September this year. Did you hear, you know, did you know that this was happening, that there was this air battle over Britain, you know, to prepare for
yes,
the invasion?
That Britain was heavily bombed, one knew, and one, of course, one heard this from the BBC News, and I think one... We felt it was dreadful. We were being bombed ourselves, and it was an awful thing. I don't think I realised that how ill-prepared the population here was, because there weren't any shelters, and British houses don't have cellars, so they're probably in proportion far greater losses. Although the bombing was rather... concentrated on the few months, and in during that time, of course, the actual bombs were that much smaller. I mean, we had the same caliber, obviously, put upon us, and they didn't do that much damage per house because they were sort of 250 kilo or 500 kilo, which was comparatively small, really. Yes, I think one knew. One didn't know all the details. I mean, obviously, one didn't call it the Battle of Britain. It was Britain being bombed for invasion. Yes, we knew about it, but obviously not all the details. And this is where our fighter pilots and bombers came in, of course.
The Pearl Harbor... And the, you know, particularly Japan sort of entering the war on Germany's side, how was that regarded?
One didn't really like Japan much. One felt very remote from them. One didn't understand them. And
I remember being a student at Heidelberg, and the foreign minister came and he spoke to us, and we actually booed him, and he was an ally. Now, nothing happened to us at all. That's the sort of feeling. I suppose we just felt like it. I don't know why. That was very remote. So one heard about Pearl Harbor. I don't know whether quite the extent, possibly. And of course, it was Germany declaring war on America, which we thought was just unbelievable, because whatever was said about America, we knew they were extraordinarily powerful, extraordinarily rich nation, and that was courting absolute disaster. But by that time, I suppose, Hitler was already quite past it. He'd been right in his campaign so often. Against his generals, he'd started one or two campaigns and they'd all come off. So he went on that way and did it. I don't know any of the background of why he did. War was declared on America. We seem to think he was mad.
Rather like your reaction to the Russian invasion, it would seem.
Yes,
what you said. Mm.
But even worse, because we were already engaged fighting Russia, that enormous country, and obviously the. It wasn't prospering. It was an incredible campaign to imagine you can occupy Russia. That.